Roseanne is coming back to the small screen with new episodes at the end of March, 21 years after going off the air, and 30 years since its pilot episode aired on ABC. Roseanne will join Murphy Brown, Magnum P.I., and Cagney and Lacey as shows getting new life in 2018. On this Monday, February 12th, this is the morning show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Kate Archer Kent will be back from her vacation tomorrow. We'll spend this hour talking about the trend of rebooting TV series from the past to see if they can catch a spark once more for the networks and their sponsors. Which recent TV reboots are you excited about? Which ones do you think are duds? 1-800-642-1234 is the number for you to reach us. Ideas at WPR.org is another way to go if you want to email. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our guest today is Robert Thompson, a professor of television and pop culture and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Robert Thompson, thank you for joining us. We keep hearing more and more about old TV shows that are getting a reboot. Roseanne, Magnum P.I., Murphy Brown, Cagney and Lacey, The Office. The list goes on and on. Why is this happening?
It does go on and on. I just started jotting these down before you called. And between the ones that are coming up and the ones that have just happened in the last 2 years or so, it is a really long list. I think the reason for this is pretty obvious. All of these shows are pre-sold. They've got a brand. People have heard of them. Some of them, like Full House and Roseanne, were enormous hits. And the idea of going back to that well a second time makes perfect sense. It worked really well one time. Why not try it again? But there's another reason why we're seeing so much more of this now. It's nothing new. This goes back to the beginning of the medium. But we're seeing so much more of it now because there are so many more places to put this stuff. Used to be you had three networks. They had 22 hours of prime time apiece per week, and there just wasn't that much room. Now you've got not infinite space for more programming, but Netflix is making it look pretty close to that. So all of these ideas that would have just, you know, gone over someone's desk in 1975 or 1985, now suddenly there's plenty of places to do them.
Some articles have suggested that Hollywood is running out of ideas, so the networks are bringing back shows that are proven hits. Any truth to that?
Well, I don't really buy that. I mean, when you look at, for example, the nominations for the major awards of movies each year, there are usually a bunch of really good movies in those nominations, including some really interesting and experimental stuff as well. So I don't think it's so much that they're doing this because they can't think of anything else, because they are doing other things. I think they're doing it because this stuff had value. I mean, having a big hit show, you know, go for 11 years and, you know, have a generation of people watch it and then another generation watching it in reruns, to then let that completely disappear, it would kind of be like paying off the mortgage of your house and then moving out and abandoning the house. I think the people who know these shows feel that there's a lot of equity built up in them, and they've seen them work in the past. Hawaii Five-0 was a remake that I think is now in, what, its eighth or ninth season, which has been doing not huge hit CBS, but it's been doing yeoman service for them.
We talk a little bit about, you mentioned that there are additional channels, and one of those reasons for the additional channels has been the advent of HDTV, where a broadcaster, a local broadcast station, can add three or four or five channels to the main channel, which I'm sure they were licking their chops and say, hey, we get three or four or five more channels, a second later saying, what are we going to put on them? And we see some things like Antenna TV and MeTV, which are strictly rerun channels. So I'm thinking that with all the reruns out there, do we really need the reboots?
Well, that's a good question, and we can never answer it until we see the reboot. My favorite example of this is a relatively recent one. Its second season just was introduced last Friday, and that's One Day at a Time. One Day at a Time, back in the 70s, came from the Norman Lear company that did All in the Family and Maude and all of those Good Times and all those spin-offs. And One Day at a Time was a perfectly competent show about a single woman raising two teenage daughters. Now, that doesn't sound like much today, but that was a pretty big deal back then. We had had very few divorced women as stars of television shows. As a matter of fact, when the Mary Tyler Moore Show was introduced in 1970, CBS would not let her be divorced. She had to have broken up with a boyfriend, but she couldn't be divorced. So in the mid-70s, when One Day at a Time came out, that was a pretty big deal, and it was a pretty good show. Then Netflix introduces a new version of it last year, and second season just started. And for, it's got the same title, and it's got the same theme song. But other than that, this is way more than a reboot. It's a new boot. It's a whole new pair of boots set in a different city, Miami. It's about a Cuban-American family. But it's still got some of the spirit of that first show, and it's still a very old-school sitcom. And Norman Lear, at 95, has still got his name attached to it. That's an example, when you ask the question, will these why do a reboot? The answer to that in the case of One Day at a Time is that it was a really, really good reboot. You may ask me about other reboots, and I may have the opposite answer.
Sure. Well, one that strikes me, and you mentioned Netflix, is Fuller House, which Netflix really talked a lot about before it came out. And that, of course, is following the kids from Full House into adulthood, at least some of the kids. Is that one doing pretty well? And there's an example of using some of the actors from the original show in the reboot as opposed to One Day at a Time.
Right. It is. I think it when it was introduced, the day it was introduced, I think it broke Netflix's records for the highest rated new show they'd introduced. I'm not sure if it still holds that record, but there were a lot of people looking forward to that. And a lot plays into that. First, you've got the generation of people who watched that show the first time around when it was part of ABC's TGIF schedule. And then you've got all the people who watched that show when it was in syndication on various places. So that Full House story, you know, covers a lot of audience, and people were really looking forward to Fuller House. And you're right, that show tries to be as close to the original as it can. Everybody's older, but they've got new little kids. The attitude is the same. The cheesiness of the jokes are the same. But that's what they, you know, that's what people, I think, were looking for. If you would have done Full House and made it like Curb Your Enthusiasm, I don't think anybody would have bought that.
Now, are there certain qualities about a show that would make it ripe for bringing it back?
Yeah, well, I'm of the opinion that you could take any show that's aired on television, and if you executed it well, if you did it better than it had been done the first time, or in the case of a really good show as well, you could probably make a good show of it. I don't think there's any specific elements. I think the ones that get green lights are generally shows that did really well the first time around. I'm going down the list: Roseanne, Dynasty, Fuller House, Will and Grace, Hawaii 5-0, One Day at a Time, The Odd Couple, The Muppets. I'll stop at that. There's a lot more on that list, but those were all really big hits. So I think that's the first thing they go for, is that the thing's already got some brand equity. However, that's not always the case. The show I am most looking forward to getting rebooted, has been announced to be done by ABC, is called Get Christy Love. It was a blaxploitation film series from the 1970s. It lasted only one season. Its ratings were terrible, but I think it was way ahead of its time, and I think the reboot on that could be really, really good.
Hmm. Yeah, I do not remember that program at all. So well, our guest is Robert Thompson. He is a professor of television and pop culture and director of the Blyer Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. We're talking about the TV series that are being resurrected after years, even decades off the air. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The Morning Show. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Don't worry, Kate Archer Kent was not abducted by aliens. She'll be back tomorrow. We're wondering which old TV shows you would like to see come back. Our topic is reboots. Call 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email address. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our guest is the director of the Blyer Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University, Robert Thompson. And Professor Thompson, again, thanks for joining us. Speaking of X-Files, we just heard the theme. I watched X-Files religiously from its first season on, but when it came back for a reboot the first time a year or two ago, we kind of let it drop after a couple of episodes. For some reason, it seemed contrived so many years later. Did I just grow up? Or is the new one inferior to the original?
Well, I think two things happened. You grew up, and the medium grew up, in part thanks to The X-Files. And I had the same exact response to that show. I religiously watched the first one. I lost interest in the second. And I don't think that second one was in any really intrinsically worse. I don't think it was worse, necessarily. But back when we were watching The X-Files the first time around, there was very little on TV like that. I mean, we'd gotten into some of those issues with The Twilight Zone and its reboots. We'd gotten into some of it, I suppose, with the Star Trek franchises. But The X-Files was something completely different. So when it came back and it was still itself, it seemed like, you know, we'd been there and we'd done that, and so many other things had been inspired by The X-Files, not the least of which would be a show like Lost. So the years that between the first one and the second one made the second one look a lot more less interesting.
Do you think that we were biased against the fact that Mulder and Scully were older?
Well, that's a good question, because we're going to be seeing that in a lot of these shows. Will and Grace, which it seems like that show is the exact way it used to be. We're going to certainly see it in Roseanne and any of these shows that have the original cast members, including the exciting new announcement of a few days ago, Murphy Brown, who's going to be the same star. She's 71. I mean, I suppose there is the fact that Scully and Mulder were these young, in their prime people, gave it that whole romantic quality to it. But that, I think that can continue at the age they are now. It's not exactly like they're ancient.
We were talking just a second ago about Roseanne, and that was a never-miss show for our household for its first several seasons. My wife and I loved the fact that this Connor family was a Midwest family, first of all, felt like there was something to relate to, and they were irreverent. I mean, they talked like families I knew talked like. If it might not be the first episode, but it's one of the first episodes where they get called into the teacher's office, and the teacher says that Darlene barks in class, and Roseanne says, "All my children bark." And it was just the kind of thing you wished you could say to the teachers when you went into were called into their office. Despite the fact, though, that Roseanne Barr is the central character, that ensemble cast was what made it great. And many of those actors jumped off to star in their own TV series and their own movies in the coming years. Does the staying power of the actors make a difference in a reboot like Roseanne?
Well, I think when you remake Hawaii Five-0, you just have to get two new detectives and put it in it. When you remake a show called Roseanne, the title of the show was Roseanne, and that was not only her character, that was Roseanne Barr, who, of course, was a character in so many ways.
It's one way to make sure you get included in the reboot, right?
Exactly.
Make sure they name the show after you.
Yeah, if they reboot the Dick Van Dyke Show and it stars somebody else, that might be a problem. I think that show really needed as many of the original cast. And, I mean, my guess is they didn't decide to go ahead with this until they had a good number of them signed up. It is interesting, of course, that they've got two continuity problems. Mm-hmm. We find out in the last episode of the original series that Dan, her husband, has died.
Right. I was wondering what they're doing with that. Is he a ghost?
No, I hope not. I think they might just, forget it and erase it from collective memory. I don't know how they can explain it in any way that wouldn't be really stupid.
Maybe they're assuming that there are so many few people listening by the end of that series, that were watching by the end of that series, that nobody actually saw that episode.
Oh, so you're one of those who remembers they won the lottery season.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was some of the weirdest TV I had ever seen.
Yeah, they were. I think that's it's not the literal definition of Jump the Shark. That's another series, but that's kind of what it felt like happened a little bit on Roseanne.
Yeah, that was a lot of people really despised that. But that's going to be coming, March 27th? The only problem is really short season. It's, 8 or 10 episodes,
yeah.
I think. One of the things about the first Roseanne is it went on and on and on. It was 22, 24 episodes a year. You really got to develop those characters. If we know something about the first episode. She's going to get Jackie was a Hillary supporter. Roseanne was a Trump supporter, and they're going to get in a big fight about that. But then I think they're going to kind of drop that, though. We'll have to wait and see.
You mentioned there was a second continuity problem with Roseanne, and I didn't let you get to it. Which one was that?
One of the daughters was played by two different actors.
Right.
And they're both going to be on this.
That's
I've heard
funny.
Some speculations of what they're going to do, but I either don't remember them or they weren't that specific.
Yeah. I mean, one of the actors, Lisi, and I forget her last name, but she went on to be a pretty prominent role in Scrubs, which lasted quite a few years as well. It's an interesting that was just weird about that show anyway. I think they had two different actors for the son as well. So that's interesting. Anyway,
what was it? Darlene's boyfriend was played by the guy who's now the lead.
Yeah.
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, that's right. We are talking to Robert Thompson. He's professor of television and pop culture and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Our topic today is reboots, old TV shows that are being made new again, not just in reruns, but they're actually creating new episodes. And if you'd like to join us, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Love to have you join the conversation. Well, you were talking a bit ago about Murphy Brown, and that's a reboot that you said that you have some high hopes for. CBS is bringing it back for 13 episodes starting later this year. Why are you excited about this show in particular?
Well, it's as you remember, it's set in a network news operation. They put on a show, Murphy and her team, kind of like 2020, that sort of thing. And it won a wheelbarrow load full of Emmys when it was on the first time. And, of course, the Dan Quayle feud with that show put it really in the center of federal politics for a good long time. They did a two-part episode responding to Quayle when Quayle complained that Murphy was pregnant out of wedlock and all the rest. But so it was a big, big deal. Now you got a show about that show went off the air in 1998, I think. So CNN had been around forever. CNN starts in 1980, but MSNBC and Fox had only started in the mid 1990s. So the whole crazy 24-hour news circus hadn't really kicked in when Murphy Brown went off the air. So now this is going to be a show about broadcast television news in a time when broadcast television news is so different. it's going to have an older woman as its star. I presume Candace Bergen and Murphy Brown are going to be the main characters, and that'll allow all kinds of interesting issues. I think the timing for a new Murphy Brown is perfect, just as the timing for a new Roseanne about a working-class family is pretty perfect.
One thing that Murphy Brown had, and you hinted at it, is it was right on current events, which both makes it fun to watch in its original time and difficult to rerun. At least there are some subtle, things that are happening in the society right then that, you know, maybe somebody 10 or 15 years later isn't going to get.
Exactly.
Another show that was like that just had a short run, but it was one of our favorite shows, was Whoopi. It was on NBC for, I think, a season and a half, and maybe not even that long. It was all right on the edge, speaking to this was a 2003, 2004, and speaking to what color the code was that for the danger code or the terrorist code.
Right.
Was it orange or was it red? And if it was orange, everything was fine. And if it was red, you know, you blew up any briefcase that somebody left behind. So programs like that that are more set in the exact time that they're airing, got to be harder to rerun then. Maybe they're good candidates for reboots.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right about that. I Love Lucy continues to do great in reruns, and it was made from 1951 to 1957, I think, under that title. Murphy Brown went more seasons than that, but they are very hard to find. Even to find every episode you want online is difficult to do, and I think for the very reason that you talk about. So yes, that would is a good candidate for a reboot because they can update some of that stuff, which will then be out of date in five more years. The other thing is the same X-Files syndrome that we talked about before, which is that when Murphy Brown was doing that, that was pretty new. When she was actually taking on actual, you know, politicians with names in Washington who were real, that was different. Now we have seen so many places do that so well. Veep has won how many Emmy Awards doing that and going so much further than Murphy Brown ever could or did.
We have a clip from Murphy Brown we want to play. Producers were relaunching FYI so that it didn't include as many hard-hitting interviews. So they pulled a random person off the street to represent average America and do a sit-down with Murphy Brown about everyday issues. She wound up being a blatant racist, and as you'll hear, Murph could only take so much. Take a listen.
Let's talk about the American dream, Mrs. Hooley. Do you own your own home?
Yes. When my husband and I got married, that was one of our goals, and we finally achieved it. Last year, we bought our dream house.
So, the good old American work ethic paid off.
It did, until the black people moved in next door. It's all over now. You know, it's like what happened when the Chinese man bought the dry cleaners from the Jewish people. All of a sudden, there's no free delivery anymore. They're cheaper than the Jewish people. And they don't even stuff the sleeves with paper. At least the Jews stuffed paper. Although they often overcharged me for a silk blouse. It's their way.
Mrs. Hooley, has anyone ever accused you of being a bigot?
Who, me?
No, the other Mrs. Hooley. Yes, you.
Robert Thompson, what sticks out to you in that clip?
Well, that is really exquisitely written. I haven't seen that episode in a long, long time, but the way they manage to have her say all these really offensive things, but they keep bouncing in with these extreme details about the way the laundry is prepared, things we all, if we've ever had stuff dry cleaned, recognize. It's like a cross between Seinfeld and all its minutiae and All in the Family and all its loudly spoken bigotry. And Murphy, of course, is... she was the boss of that operation. She played practical jokes on people. She didn't take anything from anybody. And there is that sense that when they created Murphy, I think they were thinking a little bit of Murrow, Edward R. Murrow. Mm-hmm. The first three names of her first name are the same first three letters of his last one.
Let's move to Doug in Appleton. Doug has joined us by phone. Doug, thanks for joining us on The Morning Show.
Good morning. You guys are talking about the reboots, and I guess we've had in the past, some people we've talked about, a lot of the different shows you guys are, and, you know, are they going to be able to be covering and be as open on the topics today as they were back then? You know, whether it's political or, like you were just talking about, bigotry or, you know, anything. I mean, that can change the dynamics, I think, of what the shows were, you know. And, Michael, you know, that's our thing, is they could have changed that much because they can't talk about this stuff now as openly as they did.
I actually think it's the opposite. I think this stuff is, and the reboots we've seen, they talk much more openly about it. One Day at a Time broaches subjects that would have never played in the 1970s. And most of these shows originally played on the network, so they were under some language and subject limitations because of the indecency rule that went from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Most of these reboots now are playing, not all of them, but a lot of them on cable or on online like Netflix and Amazon, and they don't have to worry about any of those kinds of rules. There may be one exception, though. Maude did an episode back in, I think it was 1974, and Maude was already, I think, in her 40s in the show, and she gets pregnant, and she decides to have an abortion. This is the main character of the show in a two-part episode. I don't think we would see that episode today like we did in 1974.
Another show that's coming back this fall. Thank you, by the way, Doug. Another show that's coming back this fall is Magnum PI. Morning show producer Bill Martin says he's a huge Magnum fan and that he cannot imagine the show without Tom Selleck, John Hillerman, or any of the other original cast members. So who is CBS trying to appeal to? People like Bill, or people who have never actually seen the show and don't have that hang-up with new characters?
I had that same conversation with Bill Martins. He seems to want to spread the news that this is all wrong, a blasphemy. I mean, that's a tough one. Like Roseanne, we said, that was her in the title. You pretty much had to get her back. Magnum P.I., it's not called the Tom Selleck Show, and he's got a different character name. But I don't know about that one. He was so iconic as that character, the mustache and the smile and the twinkling eyes and all of that kind of thing, that's going to be a tough sell. However, it all goes back down to how well it's executed. If they do a really, really good show, and that's easier said than done, there's a lot of different criterion, but if they do a really good show, it could, you know, people wouldn't forget Tom Selleck, but they could go with the new one with no problem. The new MacGyver, I haven't looked at its numbers lately. Certainly not a massive hit, but it was doing okay. You know, that show now, you simply watch with the new guy, and you almost forget the old guy.
I wonder on the Magnum PI, if they auditioned for the part, if they had to, you know, if they basically just looked at the mustache and didn't worry about how the person read lines.
Yeah, you know, that is interesting. What do you call the most important thing about Magnum PI? Do you call it the mustache and make sure the other guy has got one? Or do you say, this is going to be the way we're most going to invite comparisons we don't want to hear?
Yeah.
So maybe they won't give him a mustache. Who knows? It'll be interesting to see how they choose to do that.
Well, very good. Hey, we're talking about rebooted TV shows, and our guest is Robert Thompson of the Blyer Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Are you looking forward to a reboot that's been announced, or are you hoping for a reboot of an old program, or are you dreading a possible reboot of a show that you once liked and don't want to see resurrected in some other zombie form? You are listening to The Morning Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We've got news next. Stay tuned. Good morning, I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Kate Archer-Kent on The Morning Show. A number of old TV shows are being given new life. We're wondering what you think of that. Are we best off leaving classic shows in the past? 800-642-1234 is the number, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our guest is the director of the Blyer Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University, Robert Thompson. Good to have you on the program, Robert. Let's talk about some shows that have already been rebooted. We talked earlier about Hawaii 5-0, the new version pulling down some decent ratings, and you've even called it completely competent. Why does Hawaii 5-0 work in its new form?
I think it's, well, for one thing, like the original, it's shot 100% on location in Hawaii, so it doesn't look like every other procedural crime show. That's, by the way, why they like to bring NCIS and CSI and Law & Order to other cities besides New York and Los Angeles. I think they've got a solid ensemble of actors, including the two Asian-American actors who quit over not getting pay equity at the end of last season. And it's really, really tightly written. You know, I don't think this thing is ever going to get a Peabody Award. We're not talking about it in the same sentence with Breaking Bad and Fargo and all of these really high-pedigree shows. But it's one of those CBS shows where they solve a crime or two every week, and lots of people like to watch them do it.
Here's a clip from Hawaii 5-0, the reboot. Here, Danny and Steve question a consul general at the Russian consulate about the whereabouts of a murder and rape suspect.
You think that Dimitri is here?
Oh, one of your cars picked him up from the hotel last night, so yeah, we know he's here.
Well, it's true that he does stay at the consulate when he's in town on business from time to time, but that was last night. He's gone now.
Gone where?
I'm his friend, not his babysitter.
You're a bad liar. He's here. We're gonna search every inch of this place until we find him. How about that?
Daichi Praichi. We polizeiskie.
In Hawaii. This is Russian soil.
How can you defend a guy like that? He just raped a woman and he killed his sister.
We're done, gentlemen.
Since when do you speak Russian?
Oh, I worked a Russian mob case in Brighton Beach. All I learned how to say was back off, we're cops, and this vodka tastes like urine.
How does the new version stack up against the original on a Hawaii 5-0?
Well, there's much more of a the buddy movie aspect to it. The two lead characters have a very funny, kind of dysfunctional, brotherly relationship. The Steve McGarrett of the original was not basically a funny kind of guy. He was, all business. I think they're both pretty good shows. I think which one is best might depend on how old one is. If you watch the first Hawaii 5-0 the first time around, as I did, I had a certain affection for that show that the usurper has never quite overcome. But we should point out before we end today that this rebooting is nothing new. When radio moved to television, all of the first hits on television, Amos and Andy, Lone Ranger, Gene Autry, The Jack Benny Show, Burns and Allen, Ozzie and Harriet, Superman, those were all reboots from radio shows.
Gunsmoke
was that's right, and played by a different lead actor that wouldn't quite have worked on the TV show.
Yeah, William Conrad was the radio guy, and he was a big guy.
That's right, very good. And then my favorite example is Dragnet. So Dragnet starts as a radio show. And then it goes in the 50s. It goes on to become a TV show in the 1950s and then again in the 1960s. It then becomes a 1989 series. They throw a couple movies in there. Dick Wolf picked it up for a 2003 series. That thing has been rebooted. I'm not sure if I can count on my two hands how many times that's been rebooted. Even Candid Camera, reality TV, started out as Candid Microphone. Candid Camera was a reboot, and it's been rebooted several times since then.
Reboots, we talked a little bit about this earlier, but let's dig in a little bit. Reboots like Murphy Brown and Roseanne and The X-Files came back with the cast, essentially coming back with the cast that made them famous. Others like Hawaii 5-0 and Magnum are recreating the characters with different actors. How much does the star power affect the potential success of the series in its new iteration?
Well, I think it depends on, it affects it a lot if they can get the people. I think in a lot of cases that they're just not available. They've either passed away or they're, they've aged out of the role, whatever. But I think when they can, they do. And there are really, I think, like four kinds of these reboots. There's the ones, as you point out, with the original cast, Will and Grace, Fuller House, Twin Peaks even. There's the one where they do the new casting. You pointed out Magnum, Hawaii 5-0, lots of others. And then there's a couple which I don't even know if they qualified as reboots. They come back after a break. Arrested Development, for example, the same exact show when it came back online. I guess it had been off the air for quite a while, but it was almost like it was just an interruption. And, of course, coming up, American Idol on ABC, that's only been off of Fox for, I don't know how long, but it's not very long. And then the fourth kind, of course, is when you make an entirely new show, and One Day at a Time is my favorite version of that.
Yeah. Let's try to get a couple callers in. Here's Debbie from Ladysmith. Debbie, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to say that I would prefer that they don't do remakes of the old shows, especially like Magnum P.I. You cannot replace Tom Selleck. The only remake I've ever seen that I thought even, you know, compared at all was True Grit. And that their remake was good, but it was a whole completely different show. And so, you know, people like John Wayne, they just can't be replaced. I would prefer that they did not redo them. And actually, in my opinion, it shows a lack of imagination not to be able to come up with a different show. You could have a similar theme, but it doesn't have to be the same name.
Thank you, Debbie. Let's move to Kevin in Barneveld and then get a reaction from Robert Thompson. Kevin, go ahead.
Good morning, sir, and thank you for taking my call. I might have a little bit different perspective because I remember the advent of color television and was completely amazed by it. Mm-hmm. I have to remember that there was only three or four television stations when I was a young kid watching a lot of television, so we were kind of a hostage audience at that time.
Yeah.
I also know as being a full-time, part-time musician that myself and my friends that are players are totally disgusted by the remakes of songs that come out. I'm just wondering why in this area when we have, you know, I have 200 and some channels to choose from and can't find anything to watch during the evening. So I'm wondering, is this because television has gone from a free to a payment type of program? I think everybody either has a dish or a cable now. Does it boil down to money? Because, you know, us older folks have seen this, and we really want to move on. We're really hoping and thinking that we deserve some fresh thinking and a different approach.
So, Robert Thompson, is it stale thinking that's the cause of these reboots?
Well, no, but I think it is money. So the first caller, I think many people share her opinion that she doesn't want to see Magnum P.I. played by anybody than Tom Selleck. And I think most people with those iconic stars as reboots, people come to the show hating it until proven otherwise, and oftentimes it isn't proven otherwise. As far as the money kind of thing, the reason we're seeing so many of these is, one, because there are so many more slots. It isn't just three networks anymore, and they've got to fill them. And these things have got some built-in value by both the people who would watch them the first time around, but even new viewers as well. So I think that's why we're seeing so many of these things. And they're collecting. Netflix doesn't care how many people necessarily watch their new release. They just want to make sure there's enough shows on Netflix that if you don't subscribe, you fill out a subscription and subscribe, and if you do, you don't cancel your subscription. So now all these shows, you know, a remake of Magnum P.I., Magnum P.I. was probably getting a viewership of about, I don't know, when it was on, 80s, probably 27 million, something like that. Reboot does not have to get that kind of number. It doesn't even have to get close to do its job. And that may be another reason why we're seeing this.
You mentioned you're excited about Murphy Brown coming back. Is there another show or two that you hope gets rebooted where there hasn't been an announcement yet?
I think my default setting is, no, let's not remake any of these things. Let's, you know, be inspired by all of these shows. I guess, and you couldn't reboot it because he's dead and he's in the title, but what the Andy Griffith Show was, that thing played in this small town south in the 60s and had no sense of, it never showed what was really going on in the small town south. To do an update of that, maybe a Mayberry thing, you could call it, they already did a Mayberry RFD spinoff of the Andy Griffith Show. I think that could be an interesting thing at this point. But, you know, you never know. It might be the show you'd never think of. Battlestar Galactica was a really stupid show in the 1970s. It got remade, and the reboot of Battlestar Galactica was breathtaking.
I like the old one, actually. Wasn't it Scott Bakula? I think it was.
Quantum Leap.
What's his name?
The older I get, the less I can.
If you say it,
I'll remember it.
That's all right. If it wasn't that good, let's not worry about it. Jeff from River Falls wants to know, where can we read about this phenomenon or watch a summary, and where should we look to watch these trends?
Variety newspaper, magazine, which is one of the big trade things, is online. So is The Hollywood Reporter, and they talk about these reboots constantly. As a matter of fact, if you Google television reboots, likely some of the first stuff you'll get will be from those trade papers. So that's a good place to start.
We've talked about how reboots are nothing new to the television industry. As we wrap up, I'm assuming you see this continuing for a while, but might we ever reach a point where it's no longer cool to bring back old shows?
Well, these things do go in biorhythm, so I don't think we're going to forever be seeing as many as we're seeing this time around. I frankly don't think in 5 years we're going to see as many new shows of any kind being introduced. But, you know, we continue to do productions of Shakespeare plays. Those things were written in the 16th and early 17th century. We still continue to, tell the stories of Greek mythology and all the rest of it. I think when certain universes are created, there is a sense that one wants to revisit them, and the reboot is one way in which you can do that.
Well, certainly movies have been doing it a lot, and now television as well. Robert Thompson is professor of television and pop culture and director of the Bleier Center for Television and Pop Culture at Syracuse University. Robert Thompson, thanks for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
A lot of fun. This hour was produced by Bill Martins and Keely Butina, with technical direction from Michelle Johnson. And coming up tomorrow at this time, we are going to continue to look at lots of fun and interesting things here on The Morning Show. Won't be me, though. It'll be Kate. She'll be back. Kate Archer-Kent will be back tomorrow. I'm Dean Kallenbeck, filling in for today. We'll talk to you in a bit.